It's getting close to fantasy draft time for a lot of you with your leagues, and we're here to help you dominate those drafts. I'm Jamie Eisenberg, that's Dan Schneier, that's Adam Mazur. Not the usual trio that you're used to seeing, but we got a lot of fun for you today on Fantasy Football Today. Real quick, we're going to talk about this a lot on our mailbag. How are you feeling after the big tennis match last night?
Feeling pretty good, you know, came down with another win. A little unhappy with myself. I was not the most gracious winner, so I got to work on that.
We agreed you have to win two sets to win the match, so technically nobody won.
No. Okay. And by the way, our colleague Heath Cummings, who set the lines on this, is declaring this a no contest because it did not finish.
Oh.
We're going to be joined by Heath. Hopefully, he's doing a draft in Memphis as part of the St. Jude draftathon that we're doing, raising money for St. Jude. So we appreciate everybody who has donated so far and continue to donate. We are hoping to raise over $200,000 for the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So a lot of drafts are happening this weekend, guys. We want to make sure everybody's up to date on a lot of the latest player news, because a lot of injuries to guys that are going in the first four or five rounds, starting with Puka Nacua all the way through the tight ends, three major tight end injuries that we're dealing with Sam Laporta, George Kittle, and Tyler Warren. But let's start with Puka Nacua at the top. So if you're drafting this weekend, it's kind of just what do you do with some of these guys if you have your draft this weekend. So Puka, Adam, is one of these wide receivers that's in the top four guys going in the first basically six or seven overall picks based on the CBS Sports average draft position. So if you see the first three guys come off the board, which I think is going to be pretty consensus, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, Ja'Marr Chase, are you taking Puka at four?
Not anymore, because there still could be a suspension. I think for the most part with injuries, unless we have an actual timeline with somebody like a Jeremiah Love or a Breece Hall, I'm 1 week away from moving guys down. But with Puka, I am going to go with JSN ahead of him and move him to fifth overall and wide receiver three as opposed to fourth overall and wide receiver two.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him fall a little bit in drafts. I just hope that if he's healthy and isn't suspended, he could be wide receiver one. We saw that last year. Mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey still has this undisclosed tightness that he's dealing with. Kyle Shanahan, understandably so, being optimistic about McCaffrey. At what point in the first round, if you're still taking him in the first round, are you comfortable with CMC?
I think I'm still taking him at five or six overall between those two positions, Tim or JSN for me there, and I may move up Amon-Ra St. Brown if it's full PPR. I mean, you don't love to hear Kyle Shanahan say the exact same quote he said two years ago.
Word for word.
I don't know if he was trolling us, but at the same time, there have been murmurs that it is contract related, which I can understand as well, and if that's the case, I'm less concerned. So he's still the guy who can win you leagues in full PPR league or half PPR, so the upside is worth it.
Yeah, I'm very concerned personally just because the last two times over 400 total touches. Next season, missed significant time due to injury. So hopefully everything's okay with McCaffrey, and there's the optimistic view of it taking him in the middle of the first round. Emeka Abuka is dealing with his toe injury, Adam. We have a somewhat of a timeline that he should be ready for week one. Does that make you okay with Abuka in round three?
Absolutely, yeah. I think more late round three, because you just never know if these are going to linger or not. And this is a guy now who's got a lot of injuries so far early in his career. So after Chris Olave, Devontae Smith, and Malik Nabers, he comes into play there. I think you could argue McConkey, Zay Flowers, guys could go ahead of him, but I'm definitely going to take Abuka ahead of Garrett Wilson, ahead of Teteroa McMillan, and players like that. But it's a 3-4 turn kind of play if possible. Maybe as early as, let's say, 32nd overall, I'd consider Abuka.
And one of the themes of our show today is talking about players you may have forgotten about. Chris Godwin seems to be somebody that players, that fantasy managers overlook a little bit. We'll talk about Godwin when we get to the wide receivers later in the show. Dan, you got Josh Jacobs, another player that could face a suspension, dealing with this groin injury. Got back into practice a little bit late in the week, but still dealing with this potential injury and suspension situation. When are you looking at Jacobs?
I still think Jacobs is one of the guys that I'm taking if everything falls a certain way and I'm at the point in round three, I think, middle of round three, probably more comfortable taking him there. The suspension is an issue, and this groin injury, is it a groin for Jacobs?
Yes.
I think it's less of an issue. I think this was always the plan to ease him into training camp.
I think he could be one of the best picks in fantasy.
Could be.
We just don't know. I mean, it might be worth the risk, especially in a 10-team league. We have a little bit more roster depth. I mean, Josh Jacobs, if he plays 17 games or even plays 15 games, he's probably going to be a top 12 running back. He would clearly be in that, instead of a top 12 that we have this year, he'd be a top 13 guy, you know, and you could get him a round later than you had to.
Let me ask you this, though, because last year we didn't really have a direct handcuff for him. It seems like that's emerging right now. Does that make it easier to take?
Yes. I was going to make that point, too. I mean, Marshawn Lloyd, the way they use him in the preseason, he played every single snap with the starters. He's basically, he's probably going to get hurt, but he looks like a pretty good handcuff right now. And if you draft Josh Jacobs, I do think you should pay up a little bit to get Marshawn Lloyd, and then you just lock up that backfield.
Yep, and you could do the same thing with McCaffrey if you want to get Kalen Black, who's looking like the backup there. For the Jets, though, maybe Braylon Allen's going to be that guy. He's another player dealing with a groin injury. A lot of different views on Breece Hall because last year was bad. Jets still not a great team, but seemingly looking like he could be the guy once again if he's healthy.
Breece Hall's per game and per touch stats are really unbelievable if you look at it. He's been one of the more efficient backs both in the pass and the run game, and he's done it without great quarterback play. It really, for me, depends on, do you believe in Geno Smith to move this offense a little bit more and score more? Without that, if you're not confident there, I think he could be one of these dead zone trap backs. So he's been somebody I've avoided for most of the drafts.
I can get that. You know, I think if he's fallen to round four, I'm all in, and that's where I have him ranked now is round four because of this injury. Round three was always a little bit too pricey for me, especially with Jacobs there, Kyren Williams there, some of these other running backs. Jeremiah Love was there, Adam, before the high ankle sprain. What are we doing with the Cardinals running back now?
Yeah, high ankle sprain is one that can linger and can affect people, really. But you look at, like, Saquon Barkley had a mid-season high ankle sprain, and he basically had the same yards per carry before and after. Jonathan Taylor had a mid-season high ankle sprain, missed 3 weeks, and he averaged, I think, 4.7 yards per carry after. CeeDee Lamb, week three or four last year, whatever it was against the Bears, high ankle sprain, and he was great. I mean, he was super efficient when he came back, so I'm not that worried about it. He's a mid to late round three pick to me, and he is going to get, I think he's going to get a lot of touches. I think he's going to get a lot of catches. So I kind of like this injury. I hope it makes Jeremiah Love fall a little bit, and I will snag him mid to late round three.
I'll just clarify, you don't like the injury, you like the value that has come as a result of the injury. I love that he's hurt. I just, you know, it's fantastic that he's got that ankle.
I'm going to go out and get a high ankle sprain this afternoon. I love it.
I want to just cover the tight ends because I want to get to your visit with the Giants and the Dolphins yesterday. So we have three tight ends that are dealing with injuries here. We got Sam Laporta's got this hip injury. Sort of downplaying a little bit. Yep. Tyler Warren expected to be out about a week with a groin injury. Feels like the groin is the new ACL at this point. And then you have George Kittle coming back from the Achilles injury. We had this conversation on our podcast today. Does this make you more inclined to take one of the top three tight ends because you just know that they're safe right now and the production could be amazing?
I don't think so. I think this year specifically, taking one of those top three tight ends is really passing up on a really good player at running back and receiver, specifically at the running back position, which is deeper than it has been. For me, at this point in time, I'm pretty much leaning toward late round tight end again, and I know it's like great or late, but I'm kind of off the great and I'm just on the late right now.
How about you, Adam, with these three guys? Like, are you scared with these injuries, or is it maybe driven the cost down to make them a little bit better to take?
I hope it does with Warren. Kind of same thing I'll talk about with Jeremiah Love, because I'm not that worried about Tyler Warren. They don't seem to be worried about it. So I think round five would be a great spot for Warren. I'm not quite ready to go round four with him. This is all good news for George Kittle, right? So I think round eight for Kittle, talking about a guy who's been a top three tight end per game in seven of the last eight seasons. I'd love to get him in round eight. Laporta, I'm not going to draft, I don't think, just because I like him. I just think people like him a little bit more than I do. I'd take him in round seven if he falls there with the injury. It doesn't make me more likely to take the top three guys. I'm fine taking them at value. I do like the last three guys, likely Kelce, Goddard, I think, more. As soon as it gets like Fantasy Pros Goddard ADP and not CBS Goddard ADP, which is round seven or eight, which is too early.
Yep, so we'll see how, I do think Laporta's ADP sort of falls to a spot now that he goes behind Pitts and Kraft, and maybe he becomes a great value pick. All right, Dan, so you went to the Dolphins-Giants joint practice yesterday. I want to ask you just a couple points on each team. Let's start with the Giants. We know no Malik Nabers was not there, but a lot of questions about the backfield. So you have Najee Harris now part of the group. We saw Tyrone Tracy have the missed block, and you know everybody putting it on him like it's his fault. I think it's probably a combination of both. But how do you view the backfield now with Cam Scadaboo, Tracy, Devin Singletary, and Najee Harris?
It's a really interesting backfield, specifically the way they've played this thing out in training camp and in practice, because reality is they're rotating guys in. And yesterday I saw all three guys, Scadaboo, Tracy, and Singletary, get reps with the first team offense and Jackson Dart. More specifically, when they ran the 2-minute huddle drill at the end of practice to get into field goal range, you know, both teams ran it. It was Singletary in the no huddle offense. And we saw in the preseason game, Singletary made a big play in the passing game with Jameis when Dart had to come out with the injury and go to the medical tent. So I'm very intrigued. And then Najee Harris worked with the second team, but had two of the most explosive runs of the whole practice, including a red zone touchdown. So it's interesting. After practice, actually, Dave Richard asked Harbaugh about the backfield and the depth of it, and he seemed kind of iffy on naming anybody a starter or kind of being full-fledged in supporting any player there.
I think the clarity that I have is that I don't think Tyrone Tracy is a good draft pick anymore if you're going, I want to handcuff Cam Scadaboo, because if Scadaboo gets hurt, I don't think anyone runs away with this job. I think Tracy could be kind of useless. The question is really about Scadaboo. I think the Giants would be pretty stupid to not make him their workhorse, unless they just don't think he's physically there. He had a very gruesome injury, but he should be, hopefully, so much better than the other guys. If he's not, then he's just not that great of a running back. He doesn't have breakaway speed, but he's super tough, and I think he's an absolute weapon near the goal line. It'd be a crime if he's not their goal line back. So I think Scadaboo, big part of his appeal, he was on pace for 60 catches in the games with a normal snap share last year. I think that's gonna be more like 40 to 45 catches, so I don't think he's gonna be quite as good. For me, once Breece Hall is off the board, we're talking mid-round four, I hope, Scadaboo comes into play. But I think he's a late-round four pick for me because there are some concerns here. He won't have the same type of role in the passing game. But the Giants would be pretty stupid to use Devin Singletary or Najee Harris ahead of him, in my opinion.
He's fallen into round five for me. I am concerned just because there's a lot of running backs in that range. David Montgomery, Bucky Irving, Quinshon Judkins. Right. You know, there's just a lot of guys I think that can have similar upside and also similar downside. Let's go to the Dolphins. I think everybody's going to draft Devon Achane in the first 15 picks, seemingly getting the full workload. But the passing game, did anything stand out to you that, okay, I want to get Malik Willis as a late round quarterback. I want to target Caleb Douglas. Is there anybody that you can look at and say, I want one of these Dolphins?
Well, it's interesting because the Dolphins offense was completely overwhelmed by the Giants defense. I think after practice, we asked Brian Burns, it looked like guys had six sacks out there. He's like, six? It was more than that. And they were just plays blown dead over and over again. With that said, it doesn't necessarily dissuade me from Malik Willis because he's going to scramble more and he's going to run more and he's going to have a good chance to be one of the highest rushing yards per game quarterback in this year in fantasy football if he starts all 17 games. So I'm in on Willis. I'm in on Achane because there wasn't any backup running backs rotating in. It really does seem like he's one of the last true workhorses we have left in the NFL. Passing game, a little iffy. It was actually Greg Dulcich who seemed to get most of the targets there during the practice.
Yeah. Another late-round tight end, I think, that you could look at. And so we'll see if Malik Willis could be one of these quarterbacks that a lot of fantasy managers gravitate toward. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to come back and talk about some quarterbacks that you may be forgetting. Are we overlooking Dak Prescott? What about Baker Mayfield, Jordan Love? Can these quarterbacks be starters for you? That's next here on Fantasy Football Today.
I'm going to talk to you right now about Omaha Steaks, and this is a perfect time for me to do it because just last night, I cooked four Omaha Steaks for my family, and they were awesome, and we completely devoured them. And tonight, Omaha Steaks burgers and hot dogs for the family. They also have seafood and side dishes. They have so many things at Omaha Steaks. If you want affordable, easy to make, delicious food, Omaha Steaks is honestly a no-brainer. This is like having a trusted butcher and gourmet shop in your kitchen. And let me tell you about the burgers. Incredible deal here. Try a Burger Perfection Flight for just $79.99. This is what you're getting. 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of steak, each with its own unique flavor profile and texture. Again, incredible value. So try the Burger Perfection Flight from OmahaSteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with the promo code FFT. That's OmahaSteaks.com, promo code FFT for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Whoop, the wearable health and fitness coach that gives you personalized insights into your sleep, recovery, strain, and overall health so that you can make decisions aligned with your daily goals. Whoop is intentionally screen-free, meaning no constant pings to get more steps in. Instead, it works alongside a mobile app to deliver deeper psychological insights that help you truly listen to your body. Whether you choose Whoop One to power performance, Whoop Peak to elevate long-term health, or Whoop Life for medical-grade tracking, you get a tailored experience designed for your journey. Personally, for me, I love using Whoop because it's during football season. I have a hard time keeping up with my exercise. I have a hard time keeping up with my sleep. It does a great job in keeping me on track. So I love using Whoop to help me get through what is a grind from now until January. So make sure you're checking out Whoop. For more, head to whoop.com. Drafts are happening to help raise money for St. Jude. Our own Heath Cummings is currently in Memphis, as you're seeing here live. And you can follow along with this draft on the St. Jude Twitch stream. They are doing a draft to raise money for the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Heath does this draft with them. I think it's like 4 or 5 years in a row. Usually we try to get a hold of Heath, but we're having a little technical difficulties connecting because they're just having so much fun.
Yeah.
And so this draft will go on, you know, past our show, so make sure you check it out. They always do crazy things. They have people pick their draft picks for them, people that are watching the stream. But really it's all for the same cause, and that's to raise money for the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. There you see Heath on camera there, and you can still donate for our draftathon. Go to tinyurl.com/fftdonate2026. You can still bid to be in leagues with us. It's, again, the goal is to raise over $200,000. We did a great job with the tennis match. You know, kudos to these two guys yesterday, and Heath is doing his part to help St. Jude as well. So check out the TikTok stream, the St. Jude TikTok, St. Jude Twitch stream to follow the draft there.
Do you think Dan can sing a song that has the word Memphis in it?
No,
Dan, sing a song that has the word Memphis in it.
How is this? You expect me to just know any song with the word
Memphis? You don't know.
There's one of the most famous songs in the world that has the word Memphis in it. You might be
Georgia.
I thought he was going to get that.
You went
one.
Georgia. All right.
Yep, very well.
That's the only one I can think of.
All right. Let's talk about quarterbacks. So the theme of the show today, we got you some news on the players to open the show. The theme of the show today is don't forget about these guys. Let's start with a couple
walking
quarterbacks. Let's talk about some quarterbacks
there
here.
There it is. Walking in Memphis.
Yeah, somebody told him. 100%. It feels like we don't talk about Dak Prescott enough because we talk about the top five quarterbacks, which for the most part are going to be in some order, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Drake May, Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels. Then I think it goes Jalen Hurts, probably a QB6. And then this is where Dak Prescott comes into play. He's in that conversation, I think, with Justin Herbert, Caleb Williams, a lot of those, you know, third tier, fourth tier quarterbacks, depending how you tier quarterbacks. Where are we on Dak Prescott, Adam? Because when he's healthy, has not played back-to-back healthy seasons since 2019. But when he's healthy, he's amazing.
He's 33 years old. You worry a little bit about the rushing. Last year, the rushing number, the attempts per game came back up from a down year in 2024, but the yards per carry came down. That's a good thing, because I think the yards per carry could easily come back up, and he can get back over a 200, 250 rushing yard pace, something like that. We could use that. But keep in mind, this guy could lead the NFL in passing yards. And if you look at his 17-game pace from week 7 through 17, because he played half of week 18, that's when CeeDee Lamb came back, week 7 through 17, he's on pace for over 4,800 yards. That means he has massive upside. I mean, he has QB3 upside. He could have that Matthew Stafford kind of season, right? He could just destroy it. He needs to get his touchdown rate up a little bit. It was 5% last year. Needs to be closer to 6%. There's really no reason why that can't happen. I have not drafted Dak Prescott once, and I regret it. That needs to change. I'm going to make it a point. It's been mostly mocks, thankfully. I'm going to make it a point to get some Dak Prescott, because I don't care. Their defense will be a little bit better. They're going to be super pass heavy. He's going to be among the league leaders in passing yards.
I'm a little less bullish on Prescott, and it's mostly because, and we talked about this like 4 years ago on the show, I knew post-injury, the injury that he had, the major injury, the lower, was it a leg?
Ankle. Broken ankle.
Ankle injury. Yeah. The rushing would come down, specifically in the red zone. They stopped using him as a red zone rusher, so that I think is out of his game at this point. And I actually think the Cowboys defense is going to take a big jump forward with Quinnen Williams playing a full season, and obviously Caleb Downs added to that defense.
But they're still going to throw. Like
they're going to throw.
So they've had, I mean, they used to have good defenses with Dan Quinn, and they still threw the ball a ton.
For sure.
It's his offense.
It is still his offense, and I do think Prescott is one of, if not the best processing quarterbacks in the NFL, so he will be able to move the ball through the air. The problem is, I feel like I can get an arbitrage play with Jared Goff multiple rounds later, and I'm not losing too much there. I have similar weapons, similar processing style quarterback, similar upside from a touchdown standpoint. I'm not losing that much in my mind in the rushing department.
You're losing about 200, at least 200 rushing yards.
Maybe.
If not 250 with Goff.
I think Goff,
but you're
was,
right.
Goff was -1 last year with rushing yards. Like, you don't get that at
get
all
loaded,
from him. But it is a great comparison because you are talking about guys that should be high-volume passers, great receiving cores.
Right.
And the schedule, if you look at it, really favors
Goff.
The Lions and Goff. So the value there is that's a great call. Let's talk about Jordan Love. You drafted him in the Superflex league that we did, Superflex mock draft that we did on our podcast this morning. Jordan Love looking like he's going to have a little bit of a bounce back year, a resurgent year. He's always been a good quarterback. He just hasn't been a great fantasy quarterback. Do we get that?
Probably not. He had a sort of great year three seasons ago. I think he was QB 8 or 9 per game. He averaged a little bit more than 22 fantasy points per game in 6 point per passing touchdown leagues. And I think that's his ceiling. But what's happened since then? He hasn't been a worse quarterback. He's had some games where he's left early with injuries. That's hurt him on a per game basis. But it's Josh Jacobs. Once they got Josh Jacobs, really like midway through Jacobs' first season there, they've been one of the most run-heavy teams in the NFL. Love is not a big-time rushing quarterback. He's kind of like a little bit better than Dak Prescott, maybe. But if they get back to throwing the ball, if they're a middle-of-the-pack pass rate team, we could have a top 12 quarterback here. Not a top 5, but a top 12. He's probably going to be more like QB 17 per game if they're super run-heavy again. But he is really good, and if Jacobs isn't as good or is suspended, we'll have a better year for Love. He'll outperform his ADP.
It's a tricky one for me because I really like him as a player.
Yes.
You heard Matt LaFleur say this offseason, like, it's really clicking for him from a mental standpoint, which could mean LaFleur feels more comfortable with a more pass-heavy approach. The issue being LaFleur's career as a play caller, it's been very slow pace and it's been very run-heavy, like you said. Simply in the red zone, that's where it's been trickiest.
Yeah.
So without the rushing upside, with the history of the play caller, and obviously if Josh Jacobs plays the full season, it's hard for me to buy in when I have players going around him like Malik Willis that I like more. Even Daniel Jones, a player who I think fantasy managers are really sleeping on this offseason. So I just don't really like the range he's being drafted in.
We'll talk about Jones in a second. The thing that I like for Love, you guys mentioned the Cowboys defense. No Micah Parsons potentially for the first 6 weeks of the season. This is not the same NFC North. You have some really great offenses in this division, the Lions and now the Bears. What they do, I think, pushes the pace of what maybe the Packers have to do, and they may see a little bit more volume. The downside, though, which is this is a tricky one, because you have Tucker Kraft coming off a pretty significant injury, and Christian Watson, who has struggled to stay healthy. If he loses any of those, either of those two guys, to me, he's done. I don't care how good Matthew Golden is. I don't care how good Jaden Reed could be. He needs both those guys, I think, to elevate himself. I don't think it kills him as a fantasy quarterback because he can still get numbers.
Yeah.
But I think if you're talking about top-end production,
yes,
having those two guys on the field certainly matters.
Can I give you, one stat? They gave up, they allowed 20 or more points in 8 games last year. That's pretty good. He scored 21.7 or more fantasy points in 6 of those 8 games. So without Parsons, if they give up more points, you could have a really nice player here.
Yeah, so good off to a good start. You know, maybe one of these quarterbacks that you pair with like a Malik Willis, or maybe if you just wait enough, you go a Jordan Love, Baker Mayfield combo. Not a lot of people would like that, but we're making a transition here.
Yeah.
So Baker Mayfield, Dan, 2 years ago, unreal fantasy quarterback. Last year, however, everything fell apart. You had injuries to Mike Evans, injuries to Chris Godwin, offensive line was banged up, and then Baker was really hurt. Another offense coordinator, 2 years ago he had Liam Cohen. We see what Liam Cohen's done for the Jaguars. Now he's got Zach Robinson. Do we like Baker Mayfield as one of these late-round guys?
Love Baker Mayfield this year as one of these late-round guys. You said it best. I mean, last year they had their center playing left tackle. Now their left tackle, their star is Tristan Wirfs back. You can move the center back, and he was amazing there. So this offensive line, I think, is going to rebound as one of the 5 best in the NFL. You have Igbuka going into year 2. I really like Ted Hurst, the rookie they got, and he's come along strong so far in training camp. And Baker himself, I mean, if you watch Quarterback Show on Netflix, you saw how injured he actually was. He couldn't really throw the ball in some of the weeks. So if he's fully healthy, now you have to ask yourself how much of that production was Liam Cohen, because that was a career year for him, and it's really an outlier versus
the rushing
career.
Yep.
Yes. So I'm not sold on that, but Zach Robinson has a really good track record, I think, as a play caller, specifically getting players like Drake London involved, and I think Igbuka will be that player. So as far as late round quarterbacks go, Baker's definitely one of the guys I like a lot.
I love it. It's a great call. And the first 6 games of the year, Baker Mayfield averaged 24.9 fantasy points per game and 6 point per passing touchdown leagues. Remember that number, 24.9, because he had a 28 game stretch from week 13 or 14 of 2023 to week 6 of 2025, where he averaged 24.7. That's who he was late in that first year with the Bucks, all throughout 2024 and first 6 games of 2025. He dealt with injuries. That's exactly when Igbuka got hurt, I think, was week 6.
Right.
He wasn't the same player. Mike Evans was in and out of the lineup. And Evans not being there, I think, hurts his upside because that's his touchdown guy. But there are so many reasons. The offensive line, all the injuries that he had last year, the fact that he did it for 28 games from 2023 to 2025, he's a great bounce-back candidate. Absolutely.
And just one other underrated thing. Jalen McMillan healthy too. I mean, he didn't have McMillan for a majority of that season too. That's kind of when Baker took off those last part of the season. You know, remember, because Evans and Godwin were hurt in 2023, and McMillan had that 7 touchdown performance in the last 5 games of the year. So Hurst and McMillan adding to Igbuka and Godwin, it's a pretty solid receiving corps. I didn't realize that both of you, Giants guys, Love Daniel Jones. I know he loves Daniel Jones. No. You brought up Daniel Jones on almost every podcast. He's looked great. He's doing this. He's doing that. You said you love Daniel Jones overlooked. The floor is yours. Go ahead.
You want to start?
First of all, I love how much Dan hates being in the middle. He hates the middle. I don't know where to look.
I like middling conversations and dinner parties, but not this situation.
Not a middle on this show. I would just say that I love him in that, hey, if you want a late round pick, a late round flyer, he's in that conversation now with Baker Mayfield, with Malik Willis, with Tyler Shuck, whatever. We had to see it, and I haven't actually seen it with my own eyes, but the reports are that Daniel Jones is looking great. And the point I would make is that if you're going, oh, he's coming off a torn Achilles, it is obviously a big deal, but last year was the best year of his career, and he barely ran.
Right.
And he played some of that with a broken leg. So
the two worst games he had were with the broken leg, before the Achilles.
Yeah, but he ended up as QB 14 per game with a broken leg and a partial game where he barely played and tore his Achilles. So he doesn't need to be a rusher. He just needs to be mobile. Hopefully he is, and he could be a top 12 quarterback.
I mean, you see it right here on the screen. Look at his first eight games. I don't really understand the ADP. It's almost as if people just think he's injured now, or he's just...
I think the position's just loaded.
Yeah, that's part everyone's
the position ADP, is right? loaded, but he was a QB 1 when healthy last year. Returns. All, he loses Michael Pittman, but outside of Pittman, they're returning everybody else to that offense.
We hope.
Well, we know, right?
Pierce,
yeah. We don't know with Pierce, right? But Keenan Allen, it could be a good safety valve. I just think the value is really good, and I don't really understand the ADP.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, the Colts are not a sexy team.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a run-heavy team because of Jonathan Taylor. And then again, I think the position just absolutely loaded, plus he's coming off an injury. So a lot of things that he has to work against. But you've said this quite a bit. If he gets off to a good start, he's going to be one of the more added quarterbacks because of what he accomplished last year. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some running backs that we like that are being overlooked a little bit. David Montgomery, we don't talk about him enough. Bucky Irving, same thing. We'll talk running backs next here on FFT. Welcome back to Fantasy Football. Today we're talking running backs that you may have forgotten or just forgot about or just overlooking in drafts, or maybe just we haven't talked about them enough. Let's start with David Montgomery, guys. So this is a player who the Lions forgot about at the end of last season. They went to Jahmyr Gibbs. Montgomery was this sort of RB2 flex that a lot of fantasy managers drafted, and then he was just unplayable at the end of the season. So now, Dan, he goes to Houston, and the reports have been great. I mean, it looks like he's going to be their guy. I know Woody Marks had a big run last night, and he's going to be a factor. I think it makes more sense to play Montgomery first and second down. Woody Marks, great track record catching the ball in college. But how do you view the Texans' backfield, but more specifically, how do you view Montgomery when you're drafting Montgomery?
I love Montgomery. I mean, first of all, last year he had an 86% catch rate. I think it goes overlooked a lot what he can do in the passing game. He's not a bad receiver. He's going to get more opportunities there this year. I think it's 33 touchdowns over the last three seasons, which is insane, really, for a guy that we're getting as late as you can get him. I think it's easy to project 10-plus touchdowns. The game script will be great with that defense. Their offensive line is a work in progress. That's the part that concerns me the most, but I was a big fan of Jennings Dunger, who they drafted in the first round. I thought he was the best run-blocking lineman in the class. He's going to start on their interior most likely, so I'm pretty high on Montgomery this year. He's one of my backs I like to target.
Yeah, he's pretty good value in round five. He's a bridge running back, I think, for us, because after David Montgomery, you're looking at guys like Bashaul Tootin and Jadarian Price and the Steelers guys and Tony Pollard and Travion Henderson, right? You're looking at guys who are definitely sharing, probably more than Montgomery is sharing. And a lot of guys that we don't even know if they're going to be the goal line back, I think David Montgomery is going to get the vast majority of the goal line carries. I project it that way. I don't have any basis for that. I expect that to be the case, and I think he's a pretty good running back. He's not a dynamic guy. He's not going to catch a ton of passes, although they've been pretty, the coaches are raving about his route running. So yeah, he could be like a 40 catch guy. I think he's really interesting to compare to Cam Scataboo. I mean, I feel like ADP has drilled it in our head that we have to take Cam Scataboo over David Montgomery, but I don't know that we do. Neither of them have breakaway speed. Scataboo's longest run was like 23 yards. I think he averaged about 4.1 yards per carry. Can David Montgomery do that? Absolutely. Whose offense is going to be better? That's a toss-up. So
youth, I think, is why people gravitate towards Scataboo.
He's 29 years old, Dave Montgomery. That's the problem. And I would go with Scataboo for that very reason. But Montgomery's a slightly worse version.
Oh, we get another week of the rotation that you saw. Yep. I'm taking Montgomery over Scataboo. Good, They're already close right now. I think I have Scataboo 21 and Montgomery 22. The hope would be is, and we saw this, they gave us a blueprint under D'Amico Ryans in this, you know, front office. Joe Mixon discarded, and they turned David Montgomery, they turned him into, you know, still a really good fantasy runner. Different players, but, you know, again, the path is there for them. Another guy that sort of is in this bridge range is Bucky Irving, Adam. So last year, got off to a great start, had the injuries, came back, was not the same guy. They signed Kenneth Gainwell. They still have Sean Tucker. How do you view Bucky Irving?
more optimistically, actually, one of the reasons why is Dan made a really good case about him about a month ago. And
you mean you guys agree on something?
Yeah, we agree on more than we disagree. I don't know about that, but we agree on a lot more than you might think. But Bucky Irving, it really comes down to Sean Tucker and not so much Gainwell. If he just, as long as Sean Tucker is not the exclusive goal line back, I think Bucky's going to be pretty good value in round five. If Sean Tucker is basically Zach Charbonnet last year, then Bucky's going to be Kenneth Walker, who is, I think, RB 28 per game. But consider this. Bucky Irving in the first four games of the year was on pace for 81 catches, and he didn't have a single target on third down. This is a guy that if he's playing, he's going to get targeted on first and second down. 81's too much to expect, but 55 catches, I think even if he's not the third down back, is realistic because he's so good in the passing game. You watch his tape last year, his best plays are in the passing game. So as long as Sean Tucker is not completely vulturing the touchdowns, I like Bucky Irving a little bit better than Montgomery.
Yeah, we talk about this a lot, but back-to-back seasons with Irving, top 10 in yards per out run as a running back. I think he's one of the better pass game options. They're going to use him that way as an extension of the run game. And I talk about this a lot with Jacob Gibbs on Beyond the Box Score. Like, there are offenses you want to target year after year. Last year was Jaguars and Bears. These are the undervalued offenses that help you win fantasy leagues if you target a lot of players for them. The Bucs are profiles really one of those teams with the offensive line getting healthier, Baker getting out there, and also they have really big issues at corner, which could lead to shootouts in these games. So I'm really excited about pretty much everyone on that Bucs offense.
Yeah, I wonder though, to your point about the passes, the receptions in the first part of the season, that was when Evans and Godwin were sort of in and out of the lineup, no McMillan. And now if you're going to use Gainwell, who also could mix in on first and second down, how much of that do we see from? So I think it's a little bit more than just a Sean Tucker problem. I think it is a Gainwell problem also, especially they gave him enough of a contract that I think it matters. Not like the Rashad White contract, you know, 1 year sort of throwaway deal. They gave him enough money where I think Gainwell could be too much of a problem, but we'll see how it plays out. I do think Bucky's value is fantastic again, sort of in that post-Scadaboo, before the Patriots, you know, Steelers.
Right at the bridge. I just want to add one more thing, something Dan talked about with Baker Mayfield. When I watched the tape of Bucky Irving, I watched every carry from last year. I thought the offensive line was horrible. Yeah. Horrible.
It was so bad.
And you expected to be much better this year. So that could really help.
Healthy Tristan Wirfs changes a lot of things. All right, let's talk about Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. Because last year, this time, this was the guy getting a ton of buzz. And now it feels like his situation is probably better, but not necessarily getting the hype. Is he a good mid-round pick, or is he somebody that you're staying away from?
He's someone I'm really scared of following the Laremy Tunsil injury, I'll just be honest. That injury really scares me for everyone in Washington right now because they're going to move back the kid from Auburn who I'm blanking on.
Coleman,
Brandon Coleman back to left tackle. He struggled mightily there, which is why he was moved out of there. Right tackle is Josh Connerly, who also struggled a lot in his rookie season. So they have big issues at tackle that scare me there. New offensive coordinator who we have some hope for but hasn't really done it, so there's some risk there as well. So I just feel very concerned now with Bill because if Rashad White is getting the passing down work, and last year, if you look at it, Rashad White proved he could be a red zone back. He was essentially a red zone back for Tampa. Then it's like, what are we getting out of Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt outside of some big plays here and there? So it's a scary pick for me at this point.
I'm kind of with you. And Coleman was a guard, right? That they're moving to tackle. So not only are you worse at tackle, you're worse at guard now, too. I haven't really been drafting him. You call the mid-round. It has to be like the end of the mid-round picks. I usually segment the drafts in like first four rounds or early rounds. 5 through 8, I consider mid rounds. I think he's like 8, 9.
Oh, I would have taken him before then. You know, I think when you start to get to that post, you know, you listed that group, the Steelers guys, the Patriots guys, you know, I would take Jordan Mason over him, for example.
Same.
Another guy we're going to talk about, J.K. Dobbins, I would take over Kroski-Merritt because I think there's more upside if he hits. But that's the group that we're talking about here, like RB 32 through 40 is where he comes into play. You also have, just for what it's worth, Rashad White's dealing with a hamstring injury now. And you got the report a couple weeks ago that they're using him more, David Blau, the offense coordinator, using him more in the passing game. So I think that benefits Kroski-Merritt. The thing that we also saw last year was his best stretch of games came to the end of the season, no Jaden Daniels. So now you have the opportunity to play off Daniels, as we see with mobile quarterbacks. So I don't think he's somebody to run away from, but it is just interesting. Like last year, 7th round pick, everybody was trying to get Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. Now he's most likely the starter, and nobody wants to touch him. Let's talk about J.K. Dobbins. So Jonah Coleman, guy getting a lot of hype. R.J. Harvey last year finished the season really strong. Dobbins, though, the first 10 games of the season was pretty solid. Three-headed monster now, most likely. Do we still like J.K. Dobbins, or do we want to just say, if he's there, I'll take him, but not somebody I'm targeting?
He's been a Beyond the Box Score favorite on film. I mean, one of the best processing backs in the NFL. If you look at it, going into last year, I don't know if this still holds, he was one of the only running backs in the NFL who averaged over 5 yards per carry in his career. Not sure if it held through last year, but that's the type of talent he is when he's healthy. Issue being, Jonah Coleman has really stepped up and had an amazing camp. And I listened to Davis Webb, their new offensive coordinator, talk about Coleman yesterday, and he was essentially just glowingly speaking about this guy. We don't want to really give him any more preseason touches because we don't want to get him hurt. Looks that good. So three-headed monster on a team that didn't run the ball the way they should have, given their offensive line last year, threw a lot. It's a tricky situation that I'm probably avoiding.
I wouldn't say I'm avoiding it. I think round 9 or 10 for J.K. Dobbins, hopefully in a half PPR league, but he was RB 27 per game in full PPR, a little bit better than that in half and non. And he didn't score that many touchdowns. He had four
that
touchdowns
was the thing. Yep.
Yeah. in 10 games, so he could easily get more touchdowns. He averaged 5 yards per carry on the nose, Dan, so okay. He's still averaging 5 yards per carry. You know he's not going to catch a lot of balls, but I think, I'm fine drafting him as my RB 3, I guess, but if I do that, I'm probably taking my RB 4 pretty quickly after, because I know I can't rely on him for a full season.
Just to wrap this up, the two things that kind of hold for him almost every year, one, the major thing is the injuries.
Yeah.
But the other thing is we always overlook him in drafts, and he always outperforms. The Chargers year, last year with the Broncos, everybody was, RJ Harvey, myself included, and there's J.K. Dobbins. And I love the fact that he got hurt, and he was like, no, I'm coming right back. I'm not doing this again. Came right back to practice, so hopefully he stays healthy and maybe could be a surprise once again. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to talk about some wide receivers you may be forgetting. We're always talking about Abuka and Flowers, Devontae Smith. What about T. Higgins? What about Chris Godwin? We'll talk about some wide receivers that might matter to you a little bit more than you expect on FFT. Welcome back to Fantasy Football. Today we're talking about some wide receivers you may be forgetting about on draft day. Not necessarily forgetting, but maybe overlooking. And T. Higgins is one of those guys for me because we get to that 2-3 turn, and that's kind of where that wide receiver run starts. And I think it's going to be Malik Nabers and Chris Olave, Devontae Smith, Zay Flowers, all these guys. T. Higgins has scored 21 touchdowns in his last 27 games, and a lot of those were without Joe Burrow. You talk about this a lot. We don't know how to predict touchdowns, except when guys score touchdowns.
Yeah.
He's one of these guys that scores touchdowns. When you take it, T. Higgins.
I feel like we do know how to predict touchdowns. People say we don't, but I'm not so sure that's true. And even greater stat with him, wide receiver 4 in fantasy over his last 16 games with Joe Burrow. Just a crazy stat. He's one of my targeted players. When are we taking him? I like to take him after. There's usually a range of the draft where the big running backs I love, like Omarion Hampton and Ken Walker, are all coming off the board, and I'm kind of in that range where it's just Jacobs, Javonte Williams. That's when I'm taking T. Higgins. So that's typically like a mid-round two range, late round two.
Round two?
I'm sorry, mid-round three. Yeah. Sorry about that.
And the problem is I can say the same exact thing about Ladd McConkey and Zay Flowers, guys like that. And I don't know how to rank Higgins with those guys. I am hoping that the ADP is true and I can get maybe both of them because Higgins' ADP is in round 4. I think he's a clear round 3 player. I have to bring up his downside though because he was only on pace for 109 targets last year in 5 healthy games with Joe Burrow. He has one of the lowest target per out run rates of any wide receiver we'd be considering in the first 4 rounds. Not one of the lowest, the lowest. However, 2 years ago, we had a pretty high target per out run rate, and he was the top 5 receiver per game. So if the targets go up, he's going to kill. He needs the touchdowns. I think he'll get them. I think he's very safe. You got a lot of risky guys that haven't necessarily proven it over a full season in that range. He's done it multiple times. He's super safe. I love T. Higgins. I would love to get him in round 4, but if I have to take him in round 3, I will.
And non-PPR, when you're comparing him to Zay Flowers, you know, even in Devontae Smith, but guys that don't have the lengthy touchdown history that he has, it's easy to gravitate toward Higgins. Chris Godwin, we're getting a lot of buzz about Emeka Buka, understandably so. You mentioned Ted Hurst, not that you're taking him over Godwin. But Godwin feels like the reports have been fantastic.
Yeah.
And when he's right, Adam, he's pretty awesome.
Not only is he awesome when he's right, he's a guy who destroys ADP. Like you said, J.K. Dobbins, we overlook him, he does better. Chris Godwin, I mean, this is a guy who's been twice in his career on a per-game basis, a top 5 wide receiver. Last year, I thought he would struggle coming off a really gruesome injury in 2024. And his tape was really bad. He looked slow out there, in my opinion. But if he's back to being, let's say, 80%, because he's 30 now, right? He's 80% of what he was. He's a great pick in round 7 or later. And I think if you're in a receiver-heavy league and you start in 3 receivers, you could justify him in round 6. Godwin's been a guy that I started off really liking. Then I was like, I don't know. He's too old, too injured. Now I'm back in. The reports are good enough. Abuka's got a toe injury. Godwin could be a smash hit.
It's been a total reversal for me. He was a guy I was completely out on avoiding because I thought he was more name than game based on the tape from last year. Now that he's looked good in camp, I'm back in because I want him in this Bucs offense. And if he is the player he once was or any version of that, we're going to be looking at a good target share and a lot of receptions.
Yeah, I'm not going to be surprised if he's better than Abuka. Just because
it's possible.
Just because of where he lines up, he's going to play in the slot where he's always been better. Abuka now with the toe injury, like he's one of my favorite targets in any format. Just love Chris Godwin. All right, last receiver we're going to talk about here is the situation in Green Bay, because finally we have some defined roles. But here's Matthew Golden getting this hype. And oh, there's Jaden Reed's healthy. We haven't heard much about Christian Watson. And I think the upside for Christian Watson could be top 12 wide receiver. He's that good. Is he going to get enough targets? Can he outperform the other two? Where are you at with Christian Watson?
People are very high on Watson this year. He's one of the fantasy analysts, like, prime picks, and I think I understand it. It's based on the role we saw him play when he came back from the injury last year. The only difference is their roles are all different going into this year. They have, like you said, very defined roles, and they're really going to use a three-man steady rotation with Reed, Golden, and Watson. So I gravitate more toward the later guys. You can get Reed and Golden because you can get them so much cheaper in an offense we're not so sure is going to be that pass-heavy. So Watson, to me, is drafted in a range of receivers that I think I'm not comfortable taking him in.
I'm nervous that he's going to be one of these guys that's so much better in real life than he is in fantasy, because he'll never get the targets, because we talked about how run heavy this team has been.
Right.
And Jaden Reed was never really himself, I think, last year. And Matthew Golden hopefully takes that step up. Losing Romeo Doubs and Dontavian Wicks doesn't really matter, but losing those targets.
135 targets.
Right.
Yeah. And we never saw Christian Watson and Tucker Kraft at the same time. So I've actually, like, watching that one preseason drive where Jaden Reed was looking like Jaden Reed, it did make me a little bit nervous about Christian Watson in round five. I think round six is okay because he doesn't need that many targets to be great. He's like Jameson Williams. Mm-hmm. Give him 105 targets from Christian Watson, I think he'll probably be a top 24 wide receiver. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how these guys all operate together, and I think that's the best approach, is if you like this offense enough, take the one that goes last of these receivers. Right. I think by the time we get to another week or so, it's probably going to be Jaden Reed, which I love, because when he's been healthy, he's been awesome. But Christian Watson, round six, I think is the right spot for him. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's just all your questions. That's all we have left is your questions. You can send them to us on Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it these days, using the hashtag AskFFT, and we'll answer your draft needs next here on the show. Oh, please turn into our mailbag today. It's coming up at 2:30 Eastern. It's going to be a lot of fun. These guys are already fighting. All right, Mike wants to know, how much is too much to give for Ja'Marr Chase in Dynasty? Defending champion, you're looking to dominate. Would you give up two 2027 firsts, one early, one late, and Garrett Wilson to acquire Chase?
No,
I wouldn't. 2027 draft, it's too early to say for sure, but it looks like a really stacked class, so I don't want to be trading those picks away.
Yeah, I think that's a little too much, but listen, try and get Ja'Marr Chase if you can. All right, next question. Ash wants to know, Genty, Walker, Hampton, what's the order? Got the fourth pick in a 10-team league looking at second-round options. So, Adam, how do you rank Ashton Genty, Ken Walker III, and Omari Hampton?
Differently than most people, Hampton, Walker, Genty.
Same here, differently than most people. I'm Walker, Hampton, Genty. But Genty is the clear last for me.
Yeah, Genty's first for me. I go Genty, Walker, Hampton in the order that is listed here. So all three should be awesome in round two. Next question. Zach wants to know, Dan is telling me he tops out 90-mile-per-hour serves and now wants to challenge me in tennis. I watched the match. There is no zip on the serve. Nope. It's a dead ball that's maxing like 50. I would embarrass him and haven't played in 10 years. How is the best way to do this and benefit charity? This is probably somebody located in South Florida, Dan. You're here for a couple more days. We could raise money for St. Jude. Would you go out and play Zach?
Zach, I'll play you anytime. We got into it last night, me and Zach. He made me really mad on Twitter, which is very easy to do. It was not topping out at 50 miles per hour. Maybe last night I was serving really poorly last night, but if you look back at our past matches, and I have some data on this that my brother has a tracker, it's gotten into the 75, 80 mile per hour range. So go ahead, let's play Zach. You'll see.
It looks so much slower on the stream.
It does look so much slower on the stream, too. Everyone always says that it looks so bad, but if you actually were there, but the serve was bad last night. I was pretty embarrassed with all my play last night, I'm not going to lie. But Zach, for charity, let's set this up. I'd love to play you because you think you'd embarrass me. We'll see.
Dave's serve was like 65 miles an hour. All right, next question. Tommy wants to know, our commissioner is looking to spice up the league. What change do you think is best, making it super flex with one flex or adding two flexes and removing the tight end and the kicker?
Super flex.
Oh, yeah, absolutely super flex and two flexes. Don't remove tight end, but remove kicker and DST.
I liked everything you said there. No kicker, no DST. Super flex is a must. And if you really want to spice it up, go to auction, the best way to play fantasy football.
You could also throw in an IDP spot or two just to, you know, make sure you're checking out the entirety of what the NFL has to offer.
Yep.
Next question. Wendy wants to know, what are your thoughts on Tank Dell? Will he be fantasy relevant? So we know that Jaden Hagan's out for the season with an ACL tear. Is Tank Dell worth a late round pick?
Yeah, I think he is. I think I would have been pretty hesitant before the Higgins injury, but I don't expect this one to pay off quickly. You might have to be patient, but especially if you have more than five bench spots, I think Tank Dell's worth it.
All right, last question. Thank you, Raul. Difference in strategy in a 12, 14, and 18 team league. So why don't you take 12, you take 14, I'll take 18.
12 is not much of a difference in strategy, so I would say play that similar to how you play a 10-team. But in 10-team, it's probably more valuable to get a good quarterback and a tight end because you don't lose out too much on the running backs, receivers.
14-team leagues, I tend to value running backs a little bit more because the waiver wire is so thin. I like to have three running backs on my team that I feel like I could start confidently any given week. Other than that, nothing changes.
Yeah, 18-team league, it's... no, good. Yeah. Look, there's take the best player available. You know, your strategy will sort of shake out after the first couple of rounds, but you can, if you want to get a positional advantage, take a tight end early just because I think you get Bowers or McBride or one of those guys, you can hopefully dominate that position easily. But it's similar to 14 team league. I think the running back position does dry up, but it's tough. I play in a couple of 20 team leagues and it's not easy. All right, great job, Adam. Great job, Dan. Great job to our production staff. As always, make sure you're donating to the Draftathon to benefit St. Jude. Check out Heath on the Twitch stream for St. Jude. And make sure you check out our Fantasy Football Today podcast wherever podcasts are found. We have the best male podcast host in the world. Thanks for watching, FFP.